night, 3 hours a day.
Americans love a winner.
It's the John Gibson Show.
It is John Gibson. Well, the big news is South Korean envoys came to the White House to discuss an offer from Kim Jong-un that went a little bit like this. I mean, the first number one item is Kim Jong-un wanted to meet with President Trump. Number two,
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he's committed to denuclearization. Kim pledged that North Korea will refrain from any further nuclear or missile tests.
Okay. Kim Jong-un says denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and will refrain from further tests. President Trump heard this. Apparently, he walked in the room while they were talking and said, okay, we're on. We'll have a meeting. We don't know where. We know it'll be by May. Don't know, you know, any details yet, but big news. The president's going to meet with Kim Jong-un. Met with cheers in some quarters.
I give the president of the United States a standing ovation. I think it's breathtaking. It's audacious. It's bold. It will be historic. People have to understand that what we're talking about here isn't a freeze in North Korea's nuclear program. It is the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I think that this is huge. This is as big, if it happens, it's as big as Nixon going and opening up China back in the early 70s.
Well, not so fast. Not everybody thinks that.
Yeah, so Willie.
Is this a deflection?
Of course it's a deflection. Willie.
From Stormy?
Well, yes, of course, from
but
Stormy.
Who can keep their eyes off the whole Stormy?
Certainly not from the Nor'easter, but Willie, look, just let's look back at this week.
Well, it's not so fast. Over on CNN, Aaron Burnett was, wow.
Of course, opening the door to the big question. If President Trump can truly solve this problem, that would be going down as a great president. And there's no way around that. That is the reality here.
She sounds pained to say that.
Very pained. I mean, they maintain discipline over at MSNBC on the Morning Joe show. I mean, they had Bob Woodward on. He's going, yeah, this could, you know, this could be good. And they had Jeffrey Goldberg, the guy who edits The Atlantic, on, and he's, you know.
I mean, Bob seems to be in the keep hope alive camp. I'm in the more of the you must be kidding camp. We've just given Kim Jong-un something for nothing, right. Which is to say what North Korean leadership traditionally wants, Kim and his father and his grandfather have always wanted, was the grand symmetry, you know.
Well,
we just get gifts out of nothing.
Well, and even old Will Ripley. Now he covers North Korea for CNN. He's been in South Korea for a few years. He's made 20 trips to Pyongyang, and he kind of confirmed that. It really, what Kim Jong-un really wants is to be seen with the President of the United States.
Kim Jong-un is getting something that his father and grandfather wanted, the optics of sitting down at the table as equals, face to face with the President of the United States.
Okay, but, you know, giving up the tests is a big deal. Now, you do have to wonder, Willie. Now, I don't often play a soundbite from this guy. Because he's, you know, he's on the radio. He's a competitor of ours in a lot of ways, but he's a friend as well. I was the first one to put Mark Levin on TV many years ago, and he expresses, I think, a certain level of concern from the right.
I know what they're going to say tomorrow. I know what all the talkers are going to say tomorrow, that the president has brought North Korea to its knees. And that Kim Jong-un has cried uncle. And that they're prepared to denuclearize North Korea. They're prepared to do it. And they want to meet President Trump immediately. I don't trust them. Why should we trust them? Let me put it to you this way. Is there any agreement that we've entered into with North Korea in the last 35 years that they've upheld? The answer is no.
Well, he's right. The answer is no. But this might be different in some ways. It might be different in that all of that time when they were violating agreements, they're working towards having what they've got now, which requires, in the president's view, that he sit down and talk with them. And so even if they, even if Kim Jong-un's main goal is to be taken seriously as somebody on the world stage and he meets with the president of the United States, if that makes him happy and he follows through, is that a good thing? No, I mean, once again, Ms. Burnett.
Of course, opening the door to the big question. If President Trump can truly solve this problem, that would be going down as a great president. And there's no way around that. That is the reality here.
Okay, so we're going to have John Bolton on in the next segment. And I don't think I need to remind you that John Bolton's position for a very long time has been all the North Koreans do is stall for time so they can advance their weapons programs. And I would expect he is going to take the same view here. We'll see. He was just in talking to the president. Didn't they just have a meeting, Angry Rich?
I don't know.
No, it was reported that he went to the White House. And that this has to do with the rumors that H.R. McMaster is on the bubble and he'll soon be gone and Trump is looking around for a new national security advisor. I can tell you this, if John Bolton goes to the meeting with Trump, Kim Jong-un is going to know we're serious. I can tell you that. That if you want to play good cop, bad cop, there's your bad cop.
My one dream in life is for him to run for president and have Nikki Haley be his vice president.
Wouldn't that be great? It'd
be wonderful.
No, it really would. I mean, I'd vote for him in a heartbeat. When there was a little bubble of John Bolton might run for president, I was, yeah, go. Only thing better would be Jim Mattis runs for president. anyway, so do you believe that Trump is doing the right thing in meeting Kim Jong-un? 877-317-6432. It's a very big thing. No president's ever done it before, and it gives Kim Jong-un the optics, as Will Ripley said, of being seen with the president of the United States. That's a very big deal to him. John Bolton coming up after this. It's John Gibson and Angry Rich on your radio and on your internet at johngibson.com. John Gibson, of course, the big story, no matter what else is going on, there's a lot, is Donald Trump agreeing to meet with Kim Jong-un.
This is obviously a high-stakes gamble for this president. The world is watching, the world's security at stake in terms of what we expect to see from the president today. No events on his public schedule.
Right.
But
yeah, they don't want him talking about this today. Anyway, that was NBC's Kristen Welker. Joining me now, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. So, Mr. Bolton, can I open this up with just what's your take? Do I have John Bolton there? John in the control room, do we have Mr. Bolton or not? All right, well, while we're trying to figure this out, let's remind ourselves how this started, the Korean envoy at the White House yesterday.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he is committed to denuclearization. Kim pledged that North Korea will refrain from any further nuclear or missile tests.
Yeah, well, that's what he's promising. Do I have John Bolton on the air? Okay, well, Mr. Bolton, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, can I just get your take on this, big news we're all talking about?
Well, I think it's diplomatic shock and awe, and I think certainly I didn't predict it, nor did Secretary of State Tillerson or anybody else I know of, but I think Kim Jong-un didn't predict it either. So it really turns the everything upside down, and I think it's going to be very interesting now for all those who said the Trump administration has to engage in diplomacy. They're going to get it right at the top of the table.
Well, okay, so the South Korean envoy, I just played the bite, I'm sure you've heard it over and over and over, said that Kim Jong-un pledges to refrain from testing nuclear weapons or ICBMs and accepts the military alliance of South Korea and the United States. Do you believe him?
I don't believe anything they say, but, you know, typically when you get these moratoriums by countries like Iran and North Korea, it's because they've got some technical reason not to do it. They're solving a problem or they feel they've reached the natural stopping point. I think it's important to understand. I think what has produced this invitation from Kim Jong-un is that they know they're very close to achieving their longstanding goal of being able to deliver nuclear warheads on target in the United States. And he wanted time to get across the finish line. But what he thought he'd get would be 6, 12, 18 months of negotiations at lower levels that would give him that time. So now Trump's saying, okay, fine, we'll meet by the end of May, has foreshortened that lengthy diplomatic process. In fact, if I were Trump, I'd say, why wait until May? Let's meet by the end of March.
And then how do you think that is going to go?
Well, I don't think, I've believed for many years that North Korea would ever voluntarily give up its nuclear weapons program, and I don't think they're going to give it up here. I think they're very worried now because they think that Trump's threat to possibly use military force is real. I don't think they believe when Barack Obama said, you know, sort of in a bored tone of voice, all options are on the table. I don't think they believe him. I think they believe Trump. And I think they know he's not afraid of the option. He doesn't want it. Nobody wants it. But unlike some of his predecessors, he's not afraid of it. So I think there's a level of desperation in North Korea, not produced by the economic sanctions, but produced by what they really fear, which is watching their nuclear program get destroyed.
Now, some people have said, including the correspondent for CNN who's been to Pyongyang a bunch, he's based in South Korea, that what Kim really wants and what he got out of this deal is the optics of him on the world stage with the President of the United States. Do you think that is so valuable to Kim that he would make these kinds of promises?
Well, I think that's an aspect of it. It's one reason why I don't think people in the United States, certainly myself included, predicted that this would happen. But I have a solution to that, too. I'll tell you the exact room where this meeting ought to take place. It ought to be in the League of Nations buildings now owned by the UN in Geneva. It ought to be in the conference room where in January of 1991, Secretary of State Jim Baker met with Iraqi Foreign Minister Tariq Aziz just a week or so before the UN deadline for Iraq to withdraw from Kuwait, and where for 6 hours Baker tried to offer a letter from President Bush to Saddam Hussein, tried to get into discussions. The Iraqis wouldn't talk about it. And after that meeting was over, Desert Storm began a few days later. So let Kim Jong-un sit in that room and think about the consequences if he is not serious about giving up his nuclear weapons. The way to have this conversation is for the president to say, okay, let's be specific here because denuclearization is what I want. What ports do American freighters pull into? What airports do American cargo planes land at? For us to dismantle your nuclear weapons program and take it to Oak Ridge, Tennessee, which is, by the way, where the Libyan nuclear weapons program now resides. That's the kind of conversation it should be.
Well, he'll say, as soon as Gaddafi did that, you guys went and killed him. Can we offer him assurances that won't happen?
You know, John, life is hard for dictators. Life is hard.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh about that, but I did, and I really shouldn't have. But that's precisely what he's worried about, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's one reason they're never going to give up nuclear weapons voluntarily. That is really the lesson of the last 25 years of talks with both North Korea and Iran. They want these weapons for all kinds of reasons, and having set themselves on the path to get them, they would say giving them up now it would just show an enormous mistake on their part by leaving them vulnerable.
Well, in fact, would Kim be vulnerable? I mean, if we defanged him, would it become our policy to regime change him?
Well, I think the regime would collapse at that point. I mean, I think this regime, like many authoritarian governments, is hollow and rotted out inside. And I think they know that. They know they're vulnerable. They know the Chinese are growing increasingly dissatisfied with carrying this carrying North Korea, this ugly piece of baggage around with him. So I think he sees himself as in a very difficult position. And given the bizarre nature of the regime, it's now especially dangerous. It shows that the long-term consequences of leaving that regime with nuclear weapons, in my view, are unacceptable.
So as they prepare for this meeting, what would your advice to President Trump be on how to approach a meeting, how to conduct himself?
Well, as I say, I think the discussion can be very limited. He can say, look, the only thing I'm interested in talking about is denuclearization. I've told you that's our objective. We're not going to get into protracted discussions of, you know, gradual pauses and minor modifications. We're going to talk, as we did with Libya, how we extract your program from your country. And by the way, that includes the ballistic missile program. And if that's not what you're here to talk about, it's going to be a short meeting.
Well, am I correct? Did I read a report the other day that you actually had a meeting with the president at the White House?
You know, I don't get into discussions of those kinds of things. If the White House wants to comment on it, that's their prerogative, obviously. But I just don't think it's my place. That's been my longstanding policy on all this sort of thing. I just don't comment on it.
Well, I just
even
know what
you, John, even for old times.
Even for me. Well, I just say this. All I know is what I read in the papers. And if you get another invitation, I hope you extend exactly that advice.
Well, that's certainly what I'm saying, because I think it's accurate. I think we are at a very critical point. And I think actually this is this meeting is going to foreshorten a lot of what could have been almost endless diplomatic exchanges, and I think it will bring us to a decision point. Will we live with North Korea with nuclear weapons, or will we not? I take the second approach.
John Bolton, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Mr. Bolton, it's always great to talk to you, and thanks for your time today.
Thanks for being with you, John. Thanks for having me.
All right. No, that's great. I mean,
you just said the best line of all time. Should he be afraid he's going to be murdered? Life is hard.
Life is hard. was I wrong to laugh?
It's hard not to.
It is hard not to. John Bolton says Trump just called this bluff, and it's a good thing to do, and the meeting ought to be quick, and it ought to be just a simple matter of where do we fly into to collect your stuff? Where do we bring our ships in there to get your nuclear program and your ballistic missiles, and that's all we have to talk about. Trump did the right thing in agreeing to this meeting with Kim Jong-un. Trump oppositional media line on this diplomatic breakthrough is that Trump is looking for a way to take your attention away from Stormy or the tariffs. He heard this meeting was going on in the White House. He rushed in. He said, what are you guys talking about? Oh, Kim Jong-un says blah, 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 blah. He said, fine, let's have a meeting. Knowing that was going to make big news, and it has given some of his political opponents, well, pause.
Diplomacy is always a positive, certainly far better than war or preemptive strikes or threats of fire and fury and bullying, but there is a lot of reason for skepticism.
Skepticism being, why are we giving Kim Jong-un what he wants? He wants to be seen with the president. You get nothing back from this. On the other hand, John Bolton suggests, okay, fine. I mean, and Bolton doesn't think they're ever going to give their stuff up. But if you're going to have a meeting, call their bluff. Say, okay, let's go have the meeting, sit down and say, okay, what airports do we fly in to pick up your nuclear weapons? What ports do we pull in to pick up your ICBMs? You got the information right now? You don't? Okay, we're done. Neil in Arizona. Hey, Neil, how are you?
How are you doing, John?
So, Sorry, I missed you, you know,
when you were in town a couple weeks ago.
So you're in the Havasu area generally, huh?
Yeah, I'm in Fort Mojave. I'm about 45 minutes from Lake Havasu.
Yep, and as I recall, you're teaching the urchins of Port Mojave.
Bullhead City, yes.
Okay, and
yes, I am, and I happened to have been. I was umpiring a baseball game the day that you were here speaking. Otherwise, I would have been there to see you. But
yeah, well, it was a grand old time. I love those people in Havasu; they're fun. So you take the perspective. So your little kiddies come into class, and they say. So, Mr. Neal, we read in the news that the president has agreed to meet with Kim Jong-un. Isn't that a good thing, Mr. Neal?
Well, I wish my little kiddies would pay more attention to what's going on in the world affairs. It's like dragging sand out of them to get them to utilize any critical thinking skills. But I certainly think you can't accomplish anything if you don't talk. And the fact that he is coming to us shows that he needs a lot more from us than we do from him. So as long as the United States doesn't go in and start trying to buy cooperation from the North Koreans like Mr. Obama did with Iran.
Or like Carter did with North Korea, yes, I know.
Or Carter did originally either. I mean, they certainly do need a lot more from us, but I am not in favor at all of just throwing money at them to buy their cooperation, because that has proven a failure from all accounts and behind. So, but yeah, there's no reason why we can't talk to them.
Well, here's the deal. I mean,
you can't negotiate anything if you don't talk.
Well, okay. Now, but having said that, you know, look, my little North Star on this is Bolton, and I have no reason to not believe him that that he doesn't believe that they will ever give up their weapons. So then what this becomes is a quick showdown. Give us your stuff. No, I'm not going to give you your stuff. We're done here. Goodbye. Walk away. And then it gets ugly.
Well, as you said, we have to be certainly willing to walk away, but as far as a good faith effort, if we are not willing to step to the table to begin with, you can never move beyond that.
Well, all right. Now, Neil, since you're a smart guy and you teach the little kiddies who desperately need teaching, do you believe that this is nonetheless a Trump distraction so we all stop talking about Stormy?
No, not at all. I heard something about that this morning, a claim along that line that Trump announced stuff like this just to get that other nonsense out of the news. And it's nothing that he has done to push it in the news. It's all been as part of that fake news program that's being created by the left-wing media that wants to keep pushing non-issues to the forefront of issues. You know, I can see through that. Maybe most of America can't, but I can see it for what it is. And that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Why aren't you in class today?
We started our spring break. Fridays, we have a thing called Flex Fridays where we're on a 4-day schedule. So students can be assigned a Friday if they need remediation or help with their programs, which are many that are supposed to be there today. But it's not one of my days to be contracted to be there. So I'm in the process of trying to get ready to go to Utah to visit my children and my new grandbaby that's on the way this week.
Oh, well, congratulations. Grandkids are a great deal. All right, Neil, it is great out there. I recommend it to anybody. The place where in a few short miles you can drive from Nevada into California into Arizona. In fact, if you fly into Vegas and drive down there to Lake Havasu, Bullhead City, you go from Nevada, California, Arizona, all in just a quick little few miles. You know, as when I went out there, I said, well, it's 2 days, 4 states. It's what I did. Texas, Nevada, California, Arizona, and then back again. Okay, so coming up after this quick break is another great booking by Angry Rich. We've got Larry Kudlow on here. And I think Larry Kudlow is pretty much on the record as hating these tariffs that Donald Trump is doing. I do have a question about the tariffs. I noticed that countries that think they're injured by these tariffs, and I don't know why Britain does, for instance, or France. I mean, are we buying steel or aluminum from them? But in any case, they think, oh, this is terrible, so we're going to hit some American products with tariffs just to show you that's not a good idea. It's like, well, what does bourbon from Kentucky have to do with this? What does peanut butter have to do with this? Why are these guys retaliating by going against American products when, near as I can tell, they're not really hurt by this? Anyway, Kudlow coming up right after this. John Gibson, that screaming is what you feel like a week like this. Look, there was Oscars, and then there was Sam Nunberg, and then there was the war in California, and then there was Stormy, and then there was Kim Jong-un, and right in the middle of all of that was tariffs.
It's a priority of ours. The president, again, going back to the campaign, has been very clear. NAFTA is an old deal. He wants to renegotiate that deal. We're in the midst of renegotiating it. Ambassador Lighthizer just got back from Mexico as part of those negotiations. And these are all part of our overall economic strategy.
Okay, so that was Stephen Mnuchin. My guest right now is Larry Kudlow, senior contributor to CNBC, author of JFK and the Reagan Revolution, a former Trump advisor, co-founder of the Committee to Unleash Prosperity.com. So, Mr. Kudlow, welcome back to the program, and I really do appreciate your time.
Always, John. Thanks for having me.
So I know you're not a tariffs guy at all. So in your view, how bad is this?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because the original position that the president took was, in my opinion, very bad, that he was going to slap these 25% tariffs on steel, 10% on aluminum, including Canada and Mexico and everybody else in the world. Now, I believe I was against this. I don't like tariffs, John, because they're taxes. And you can protect steel, but everybody else downstream, you know, manufacturing users of steel, airplane users of steel, everybody uses steel and aluminum. And ultimately, the consumer gets hosed from higher prices. So I was very much against this. I thought it was, very sloppy and cumbersome and not good for the economy. But then, and I'm not exactly sure how this happened, but over the weekend, apparently, Gary Cohn, the economics guy, or former economics guy, I guess got the president to go from 50 to 25. Like, that's kind of new. I didn't know that until last night. So 50 would have compounded the problem. Then the issue of exemptions and exclusions came up. So when you look at this thing now, this is so Trumpian because, you know, he acts in his own way, he negotiates in his own way and so forth, the art of the deal. So now really, you know what, effectively, with the possibility of China, nobody's going to pay tariffs. I mean, he's officially exempted Canada, Mexico, and Australia, but he's also saying, you know, regarding Europe, if you guys play ball with us on NATO contributions and some other things, we'll exclude you also. Now, we haven't gotten to Japan, which is a huge, big player, American ally. But basically, the rhetoric, the bite, the bark, rather, in the rhetoric, made the case, you know, for America first, helping the blue-collar workers, factory workers, I'm fine. But the actual policy bite is very small, as best I can determine, with the possible exception of China. We'll get to that in a minute. So I started out as a staunch opponent to this, I don't know, 10 days ago. And now, to me, I'm okay with it. I'm not even sure what it is, but I'm okay with it.
Okay, well, let me ask you. As I understood it, we were going to put tariffs on steel and aluminum coming in from the countries that make steel and aluminum and sell it to this country for metal benders and all kinds of products that are made here. Get it. Got that. But that was a limited number of countries. And then I see these countries, because they oppose tariffs, weighing in saying, well, to punish you, even though we're not affected, we're going to put a tariff on Kentucky bourbon because we want to make Mitch McConnell unhappy. We're going to put a tariff on Wisconsin cheese because we want to make Paul Ryan unhappy. Then I see that France decide, all right, we're going to put a tariff on American peanut butter, which they hate and don't buy. So I'm wondering, what are these people doing?
By the way, peanut butter is big. You know, it's a big farm product.
It is around my house, but I had a French kid visiting, and he thought it was actually, you know, something you, well, I just can't even say what he thought it was.
And Harley-Davidson's are in Wisconsin. Don't forget that.
Yeah, that one too. Right?
But look, the EU, you know, was doing a premeditated fight. So, because Trump obviously included the EU as part of the tariff, and the 25% and the 10%. As things wore on, moved on, and we got sort of the final product yesterday, although it's all subject to Trumpian change, Europe started fighting back. Remember, at one point, President said he wanted to put a 25% tariff on all European car imports to the U.S. By the way, I had heard, he had said that to me in private a few months back, and I didn't much like it. But so once that got out, so the EU is sort of fighting back. Is any of this going to happen? I don't know, because Steven Mnuchin said today on CNBC that a lot of the tariffs may be tied to NATO contributions. So if they contribute their proper allocation, whatever, 2%, 2.5% of GDP, they won't be subject to tariffs. Now, that's, you know, what's the relationship between NATO contributions and tariffs? Well, that's an interesting question to ask, but in, you know, Trump world, it's an important question. So I don't know how it's going to turn out. If I had to guess right now, nothing. It'll turn out to be nothing.
Well, then, aren't those steel manufacturers who were crowing on day one, aren't they going to be very unhappy and feel betrayed?
Well, the steel manufacturers.
Yeah.
They're the ones who think they got betrayed. Yes. In fact, we had a whole bunch of them. I was on the air for a couple hours yesterday as this was unfolding, and we got a bunch of these steel CEOs, and they tried to put the best face on it. But the reality is their stock prices were falling because they're not going to get trade assistance. And Trump, you know, walked away, kind of neutered the whole thing. The election in Pennsylvania, southwest Pennsylvania, which is steel and coal country, is Tuesday, special election. And Trump got his rhetoric out and stuff from the campaign. But the reality is not much going to happen here.
Well, then I suppose that's good news, because there was a lot of hollering if it was going to happen. Larry Kudlow.
Art Laffer and I and Steve Moore wrote an op-ed.
We had Steve on earlier in the week.
Yeah, and we said, don't do it. Don't do it, because it's a prosperity killer. Tariffs are always prosperity killers. But I don't see the tariffs. China may be a separate issue, but I don't know. So far, so good. The way it ended was a lot better than the way it started.
Larry Kudlow, senior contributor to CNBC, author of JFK and the Reagan Revolution, and a former Trump advisor. Well, still a Trump advisor, and co-founder on the committee to UnleashProsperity.com. Larry, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Great, John. Thanks a million. Good luck. Bye-bye.
I could use some of that luck, Angry Rich.
Mm-hmm. I missed the back half of that. Did you ask him if he was going to replace Gary Cohn?
I did not.
Okay.
Should I have?
Probably.
Let's hope. You know, happens. I always think that those guys, Bob and Weave, and I hate to put them on the spot, especially if there's a chance it's going to happen. You know, I'm still waiting to interview Rick Grenell. If the Senate will ever get around to approving him as the ambassador to Germany, he just said, I can't talk on the radio till I'm confirmed. Well, you know, it's been going on a year. It's this guy's birthday. Yeah, it's old Mickey Gilley, born in 1936. You do the math. The girls all get prettier at closing time. They're great, Mickey Gilley. Well, the videos are good, too, because his backup singers, they were prettier before closing time. It is John Gibson and Angry Rich on your radio and on your internet at johngibson.com. Go there, be a premium podcast member, get the premium podcast, get the morning news digestion, or the sort of pre-show, advanced show. You also get the listen link so you can see all the stuff we use to put this show together. And during the show, you can be on the online chat at johngibson.com.
Melting precious liberal snowflakes with his flamethrower of facts. It's the John Gibson Show.
It is John Gibson. So I just wanted to start this hour off talking about something I've noticed on television, which you probably have noticed as well. There are a lot of ads that come on for pharmaceuticals. And the pharmaceutical ad will say, you've got X and so condition, and here's this great new drug. We want you to ask your doctor about it. And then if you listen a little longer, you hear, this could cause skin rashes, sweating, diarrhea, heart palpitations, and even death. And I wonder, well, why? I know they have to say that because it's true from their tests and clinical trials, but why would anybody take something that warned you this could kill you? And this pops to mind because in my condition, I take statins, for instance, or I don't like it, I don't want to, and I'm trying to figure out a way to get out of it. And I've started looking at the wellness movement in this country, and to that end, I brought on today Dr. Jill Wallach, who runs what's getting to be the Amazon of healthcare, of wellness, a company called Youngevity. Dr. Wallach, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, John. I appreciate your hospitality and the opportunity to share with your listeners.
Well, so, you know, I just wanted to talk about some specific kinds of things that people my age run into when they go to the doctor and they get on medication, and how some of the products that you deal with, the nutrition and wellness products, might be an alternative. And, you know, just can I talk about these statins right now about cholesterol?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
What is the alternative to Big Pharma, if that's your situation?
Okay, well, first of all, statin drugs, of course, were created by the pharmaceutical industry to lower your cholesterol. And in so doing, about, this started in like 1948 when they came out with the statin drugs. And about the same time, companies came out with egg beaters and margarine and cooking oils instead of lard. Those kinds of things. And they created about six new diseases from a cholesterol deficiency. You have to appreciate cholesterol is an essential nutrient. Makes up 75% of your brain weight, which is the white matter of the brain. Almost 100% of the white matter of the brain is cholesterol. There's four steroid hormones, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, and adrenal hormones, which are 95% cholesterol. Cholesterol, it turns out, is an essential nutrient, meaning you get diseases if you don't have it. And doctors, by putting people on statin drugs, have created a disease that never existed before. 50 years ago, the disease never existed, even by another name. Today, it's number four killer of people in the industrialized world. It's called Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a deficiency of cholesterol. Low T is a deficiency of cholesterol. ED, erectile dysfunction, is a deficiency of cholesterol. Women who get menopause at age 35 instead of 65 is a deficiency of cholesterol. Adrenal exhaustion is a deficiency of cholesterol. And even sleep apnea problems are a deficiency of cholesterol. And so I like people to have a total blood cholesterol of 250 to 350. Doctors want you to get your blood cholesterol below 200. That's why they like the statin drugs. Nobody should be on statin drugs. The statin drugs should be outlawed. And you have to appreciate, John, that each year, Johns Hopkins, a very famous medical school up in Baltimore, Maryland, came up with this 2 years ago. Johns Hopkins came up with this figure, is that each year in America, in hospitals alone, with mistakes, which include prescriptions like statin drugs, simple mistakes, in hospitals each year, doctors kill. That's the words they use it from Johns Hopkins. 251,000 Americans. That means every 4 years, doctors kill 1 million Americans. They get a walk. And one of their instruments of death is statin drugs. And so I appreciate the opportunity to tell people, flee, get off your statin drugs. Do not use them. You want to be eating 6 to 8 eggs a day. I had 4 eggs for breakfast this morning, along with some high-fat yogurt and my supplements. And you do want to be eating 5-6 eggs a day, and you want to be drinking whole milk instead of skim milk. You want to be drinking high-fat yogurt instead of low-fat yogurt. The French outlive us by 25 years because they eat high-fat cheeses for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if you want to, and this is a big study in 18 countries, John, just came out. It's a big study in 18 countries, 135,000 people. And they said the people who ate butter and high-fat foods, including high-fat dairy products, lived 25 to 35 years longer and were able to significantly reduce their risk of things like Parkinson's disease, MS, multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, and also Huntington's disease. And so why would anybody want to be on a statin drug? Well, my doctor said I need it. Well, your doctor is giving you misinformation.
Now, let me just interrupt and tell people you can call here and talk to Dr. Wallach at 877-317-6432. And I imagine that you might want to ask Dr. Wallach, well, I'm told by my doctor to be on statin so I don't have high cholesterol, so I don't have a heart attack. So what should I do if I'm trying to avoid that heart attack or bypass surgery if you're telling me no statins? Now we got about a minute till we take a break. Okay. Do you want to give them the headline?
Yeah, the headline is, there's no single cardiovascular disease that is caused by or contributed to by cholesterol and saturated fat. Plaque in your arteries, plugged arteries, due to inflammation, eating fried foods and processed meats and oils and glutens. Heart attacks, like athletes get, is caused by deficiency of a single mineral. I've done 1,700 autopsies on kids who've died of that one, a simple mineral deficiency. And when you have congestive heart failure, that's caused by deficiency of a single vitamin.
We're going to find out what Dr. Wallach recommends if you're going to get off your statins, as I'm thinking about doing. Call at 877-317-6432 with your questions. Dr. Joel Wallach and Youngevity, the wellness supplements that you can order through Youngevity. Once again, the number is 877-317-6432. Dr. Wallach continues after this.
Hi, this is...
John Gibson, and back with Dr. Joel Wallach, Youngevity.com. It's spelled young, and then evity on the back, Youngevity.com. He basically is a provider of supplements and designed to take care of various different kinds of problems you might otherwise be on pharmas for. We're talking specifically about my problem. Of course, it's always about me. Everything's about me. Which is that I've been told I should be taking these statin drugs, and as I read the Youngevity material, I see Dr. Wallach has alternatives for statins. So if you're just taking supplements, nutrients, to act in the same way that statins do, do they keep are you saying they basically keep arteries clear?
Well, you have to appreciate that cholesterol and saturated fat have nothing to do with plaque and blockages in the arteries. That's misinformation. And, of course, the statin drugs were designed to lower cholesterol because of the misinformation. They wanted you to believe that plaque in the arteries and blockages in the arteries and plugging in the arteries is due to cholesterol and saturated fat. And the answer is no, that has nothing to do with it. So you do not want to get your blood cholesterol, your total blood cholesterol, below 250. You want to be about 250 to 350 is where you want to be. The culture that has the fewest heart attacks and strokes are the Inuit Eskimos above the Arctic Circle. Their cholesterol, their total cholesterol, runs 350 to 500, and they have the fewest heart attacks and strokes of any culture on Earth. And 90% of their diet is red meat and fat. They eat nothing but whale meat and whale blubber and walrus meat, walrus blubber, seal meat, seal blubber, bear meat, bear fat. They do not eat vegetables. They do not eat fruit. They do not eat grains or nuts. And they just don't get many heart attacks or strokes. They are the culture that has the fewest on Earth. Doctors and hospitals and universities have looked at this for 25 years because they couldn't believe the original report. And every year for the last 25 years, they come out with the same answer. And so... I actually wrote papers, it's got to be 1971, on wild sheep from the Atlas Mountains of Iran, and they had plaque in their arteries. Now, where does wild sheep from the mountains, the Atlas Mountains of Iran, where do they get cholesterol in their diet, right? They're eating nothing but grains and so forth. They've been in the zoo for about 6 months, and come to find out they were giving them stored grain that had been in the zoo for a year in a big barrel. And we analyzed it, and it turns out that the wheat germ oil had turned into trans fats and heterocyclic acrylamides by oxidizing, spoiling, if you will. And it was the inflammation in the arteries from consuming the oxidized wheat germ oil from the stored grain that actually caused the plaque in the arteries and killed these sheep, not eating meat and bacon and sausage and that kind of stuff. So the whole thing about cholesterol is a myth. It's a lie. And every year they kill more people in the industrialized world by giving them statin drugs than any other thing. And, of course, you want to be eating about anywhere from 6 to 8 eggs a day. again, because you want the cholesterol in the egg yolks so you can make testosterone. Women want to make estrogen, progesterone. Everybody wants to make adrenal hormones. And you want to maintain your brain. You want to maintain the myelin, the white matter in the brain, which makes up 75% of your brain weight, and almost 100% of that myelin, the white matter of the brain, is cholesterol. And as it goes away, if you're on a cholesterol-restricted diet and you're taking statin drugs, you are going to get Alzheimer's disease, okay, plus ED and low T, and women get menopause at age 30 and so forth. You do not want to get your total blood cholesterol below 200. In fact, the FDA sent out an email to every licensed doctor about 4 or 5 years ago saying, stop writing prescriptions for statin drugs because it causes Alzheimer's disease. And, of course, most doctors continue to write prescriptions for statin drugs. And then they run out and they buy up all the nursing homes to put you in when you get Alzheimer's disease.
Now, Dr. Wallach, so I'm looking through the catalog, and you say for cholesterol problems, you should be taking what kind of supplement?
Well, what kind of cholesterol problems are you talking about? Because I don't believe in getting your cholesterol below 200, okay? If you want to get your cholesterol below 200, you need good insurance for a nursing home. You want to start seeing a neurologist because you will get Alzheimer's disease. Cholesterol deficiency causes Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a physician-caused disease, John. Okay? It never existed, even by another name, until they started giving people low cholesterol diets and putting them on statin drugs. It's a condition that's caused by prescriptions by doctors.
Let me remind people the number here, if you want to talk to Dr. Wallach, is 877-317-6432. And, of course, you can look up his supplements at longevity.com. Chris in Havasu is on the line. Chris, do you have a question for Dr. Wallach?
Sure. I initially had a different one, but listening to what you're talking about, kind of piggybacking off of when you were talking about eating a lot of eggs, and it made me remember, too, about not only understanding what kind of foods you're eating and how they affect your body, but where those foods came from and how they were cultivated seems to play a gigantic part in our health. You have the big pharma end where they seem to create lifelong customers instead of fixing people, which makes a whole lot of business sense. But when you talk about the cultivation end, when we talk about how we get our beef, how we get our pork, did you know that over 75% of the antibiotics used in America go to livestock?
That's correct. And they do that for two things. Number one, a growth factor, because it kills off the bugs that compete with the animal food they're eating. Also, it keeps them from getting infectious diseases so they can actually have a more dense population in a herd situation without passing on infectious diseases. But hit the nail on the head. When you look at the high longevity cultures, they tend to be third world cultures. They're not first world cultures. You grow food on big farms. Farmers use commercial fertilizers from Monsanto and Dow Chemical and other big chemical companies. They only have three nutrients in them. They only have three nutrients, and plants only need three nutrients from the soil. They only need three elements from the soil. Vertebrates, including human beings, require 60. So if you're eating food grown on a big farm, you're only getting three elements. You're 57 short, and this is our problem. This is why the top 20 longevity cultures, when you look at the top 20 longevity cultures in the blue zones, according to the National Geographic, 19 of the 20 are third world cultures. That's because they still use wood stoves. They're putting the wood ashes in the gardens, and wood ashes are not ashes. They're actually the minerals that are left over when you burn the wood for fuel. And so let's say there's 25 to 30 minerals in those wood ashes. And the plant sucks them up. You eat the plant. You eat the peas and beans and potatoes and onions and squash and tomatoes and beets that have all those extra minerals in there. Now you're getting 15 to 25 minerals or 40. It's still not 60, but 40 is a lot more than 3. And so you're going to be healthier and live longer than somebody who's only getting 3. So anybody who thinks they can just eat well and look at the beautiful food in the grocery store, it looks good, it's firm, it smells good, it tastes good, but it might only have 3 elements in it, and you're going to be 57 short. And this is why we have our kids are slated to die before their parents. Our kids are the first generation of Americans who are slated to die before their parents. They're not going to live as long as their parents because the nutrients are no longer in the food. Even though we have more food than anybody else, there's no nutrition in it.
Speaking with Dr. Joel Wallach, longevity.com is his company. I urge you to give me a call. And Chris, hang on. I had to put you on hold because there's a break coming. The number here is 877-317-6432. Dr. Wallach's supplements might be the answer to a lot of problems we're all having. When we come back from this break, I want to bring up the subject of digestive health. Virtually everybody of a certain age finds themselves on a table taking a colonoscopy and having polyps removed. And, so what is it that nutritional supplements might be able to help you with if that is your problem, if you have an upcoming a colonoscopy? Dr. Wallach has a recommendation for you. Don't. And he'll tell you why after this break. Once again, I'm on with Dr. Joel Wallach of longevity.com. The number here, 877-317-6432. How supplements that he can provide you may solve some of the problems that you are now looking at Big Pharma to help you solve. It is John Gibson. It is sort of an hour about wellness and how one stays well to live longer. I'm with Dr. Joel Wallach of longevity.com. We'll be back after this brief intermission. Number here, 877-317-6432. John Gibson, I'm back talking about wellness. I got my own problems, and of course, it's always about me. So I got in touch with Dr. Joel Wallach of longevity.com. Longevity sells a lot of products. I mean, nutritional supplements are the main thing. But, I got the package. There's, coffee. There's the spa and beauty catalog. And I know my wife's going to grab this and want some of this stuff. Natural foods, there's a whole big product catalog, but I've been talking to him about the nutritional supplements I should be taking for my situation with statins, and I have a caller on the line with this a question for Dr. Wallach. I'll remind you, the number here is 877-317-6432. And but first, we're going to take Cheryl, who is also out in Lake Havasu City. So, Cheryl, you have a specific thing you wanted to ask Dr. Wallach about?
Yes, this is about the thyroid. I have nodules on my thyroid, and they're getting larger. I've had a needle biopsy. It shows no cancer. My doctor that I go to, he has told me when I can't swallow, then they're going to take my thyroid out. So it's like a waiting game, and I thought maybe there's something I should be taking or doing.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple of quick questions here. First of all, do you have any other issues, high blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis?
No. I don't have any diabetes. Blood pressure is maybe a little high, but not where I'm taking anything.
What about back or joint problems?
No, I'm 67. I'm quite active, but I'm getting older, so I could say, yeah, in the morning I'm a little stiff, but I'm fairly healthy.
Okay. Now, how much do you weigh?
Oh, boy.
We're getting personal here, okay. Doc.
I think I'm 160.
Okay, and how tall are you?
5'6".
Well, how tall are you? 5'6"?
5'6".
Oh, 5'6". Okay. So, yeah, maybe 10 pounds, a little overweight. Not a lot. Okay, well, here's the deal. First of all, if you were listening earlier in the show,
You can't get everything you need from your food. And, of course, thyroid requires all 90 essential nutrients, 60, 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 3 fatty acids. We have a basic program which everybody needs to guarantee they're going to get all the 90 essential nutrients. They're called essential nutrients because if you're missing them, you get health problems and could even wind up killing you if you're missing these nutrients, some of the nutrients. And it's called the Healthy Start Pack. It actually has 245 nutrients, 115 of which are vegetables, fruit, and berries, and things like that. It's not your grandma's V8, it's V115, okay? It also has the 16 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 3 fatty acids. There's several things you need to do. Number one, you need to change your diet. Did you have asthma as a kid?
No.
Any skin problems, eczema, dermatitis, psoriasis?
No.
Okay, good.
Can I tell you this? When I was born, I was radiated because my thymus gland was enlarged. Stop.
The main thing is you did a biopsy, you don't have thyroid cancer. Okay, so we're through that already. When you have nodules on your thyroid and they're benign, non-cancerous, this means your thyroid is working hard, trying to do its job. It's not getting everything it needs to pull it off, and so it's trying to make more thyroid to pull off doing its job efficiently. So no bad foods, no fried foods, no processed meats, no deli slices, sandwich meat, sausage, ham, bacon, bologna, salami, pepperoni, that kind of stuff. No oils, no olive oil, no coconut oil, no margarines, mayonnaise, sodas, and cooking oils, because they turn into trans fats, heterocyclamines, acrylamides, and they cause plaque in the arteries. They can cause cancer. You don't want that. And then you don't want any gluten, no wheat, bread, or oats, because they cause problems in your intestines, which result in a lower efficiency of absorption. You want to maximize your absorption efficiency. So at 160 pounds, I would take, from our program, two of what we call the Healthy Brain and Heart Pack, two packages, which will be the Healthy Brain and Heart Pack. In it, the core will be the Healthy Start Pack, has all 90 essential nutrients in it, but has other things that the thyroid needs, extra amounts of those things your thyroid gland needs to function properly. So one Healthy Brain and Heart Pack, full dose for everything at breakfast, one Healthy Brain and Heart Pack, full dose for everything at dinner time. So it'll require two Healthy Brain and Heart Packs per month, and this is for life. This isn't for just 2 weeks. Then, specifically for the thyroid, to give it some of the magic stuff it likes, we call Ocean's Gold. You want to get two bottles a month of the Ocean's Gold, and so you can take three of those tablets at breakfast for your dinner time. Okay, it's going to make the thyroid happy. And then you also want to get another group of foods out of your diet, the bad foods out of your diet, okay? They're called cruciferous vegetables. We're talking about cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, things like kale, and Brussels sprouts. So they actually cause damage to the thyroid. They interfere with thyroid function, so you got to give up cruciferous vegetables. That'll be forever. And
but what about asparagus?
Asparagus is okay.
Asparagus.
Yeah, asparagus is good. And then it'll just make your urine smell funny, but that's okay. And then you want an anti-inflammatory, okay, something that's going to reduce the inflammation. And I like what we call a Z-radical. Z like zebra, dash in the word radical. Comes in quarts. I start out with 2 quarts a month, so you can take an ounce at breakfast, ounce at dinner time. And that's kind of the diet as well as the supplement program to do everything you can do to give your body what it needs to do its job, to maintain and repair itself, but also to give the thyroid what it needs to function properly. Now, if you want to monitor that yourself without going to the doctor, you want to get a hold of my book, Let's Play Doctor, and it'll teach you how to do the basal body temperature test, if you don't already know how to do that. Most women do, because you can tell when you're ovulating what the basal body temperature is, but it also monitors the function of the thyroid. And by actually the actual temperature in the morning when you first wake up, you can actually tell if your thyroid is functioning properly by the what's called the basal body temperature. So I would get the book, Let's Play Doctor. You can look that up and you can monitor yourself. You don't need to go to a doctor to figure it out. Do it all yourself.
Dr. Joe Wallach, hang on, Cheryl. I put you on hold because I figured you might want a follow-up question, but there's this break I got to take. But you want to go to longevity.com to see some of the things that Dr. Wallach was talking about. Continuing to discuss wellness, I'd like to get on to brain support. Some of you might understand I would need that right after this break.
Hi, this is...
It is John Gibson back talking about wellness with Dr. Joel Wallach of Youngevity.com. He's got a lot of products for a lot of different things. They're nutritional supplements designed to help you head off and not have problems that you would tend to have if you just eat the wrong things and go to the doctors and take their advice. And I'll be getting a lot of calls about that, I'm sure. I want to talk to Dr. Wallach about his brain support products, but Cheryl's still on the line from Lake Havasu, and she had one more question for Dr. Wallach before I give him a working over about brain support, which I desperately need. So, Cheryl, what was it you wanted to ask Dr. Wallach before the break?
Yeah, we're talking about my thyroid, and I have nodules on my thyroid, and I have relatives, a niece, a sister, a cousin, who have all had their thyroids out. I was just going to ask him if it's a hereditary genetic issue.
Absolutely not. It's actually where you live. It's everybody lives around the same area you do. There's things missing in the soil, therefore missing in the food. The plants don't need these things that your thyroid needs. And so you can have generation and generation and generation of people with thyroid problems, but it's certainly not genetic. It is, in fact, a simple nutritional problem. If you have even some contamination with nitrate fertilizers in well water or in the municipal drinking water, the nitrates actually can be toxic to the thyroid gland and can cause goiter. I actually wrote a paper on that. It's a long story. Actually, it made me quite famous. It was the first mass die-off in America from pollution. It was a nitrate fertilizer pollution that causes mass die-off. Got it published and led to me in my career in pathology.
Cheryl, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you listening. And I hope you go to Youngevity.com and look up the things that Dr. Wallach was recommending you. You take for just general wellness and specifically your thyroid problems. So, you know, Dr. Wallach, I wanted to talk to you about statins, and we have, and I wanted to talk to you about digestive health, and we have, and which is to say, how do you avoid colonoscopies? But this other thing has gotten my attention, and that is brain support nutrition. Keeps a lot of us.
Yes.
Maintaining the ability to remember things and think clearly and articulate what we're thinking. So what is it one takes for brain support?
Okay, well, first of all, you need to eat about six eggs a day per 100 pounds of body weight. The yolk has to be soft to preserve the cholesterol. So it can be soft-boiled eggs with soft yolks. It can be soft poached eggs with soft yolks. It could be soft scrambled in butter. Okay, you have to have those eggs every day. I take 10, 12 eggs a day. I weigh about 152 pounds to maintain my brain. And then you also want fat from other sources. You want dairy fat. You want whole milk instead of skim milk. You want high-fat yogurt instead of low-fat yogurt and that sort of stuff. And put whole cream or half and half in your coffee or tea. Don't put these non-dairy coffee creamers in. And then, of course, from a supplement program, again, I like the Healthy Brain and Heart Pack. As the name implies, Healthy Brain and Heart Pack. What's good for the brain is good for the heart. What's good for the heart is good for the brain. But also, in addition to that, we have some specific supplements that support brain function. One is called Synaptive. It's the raw materials for the brain to make neurotransmitters so the cells, brain cells, and spinal cord cells can talk to each other. I like people per 100 pounds of body weight to take two of those tablets twice a day of the Synaptive. And then we also have the de-stress capsules. I like the de-stress. The vitamins necessary for the metabolism of the brain. I also like to throw in the Ultimate Niacin Plus. It's
a non-flush time-release niacin, again, necessary for the metabolism of the brain. And it's an amazing thing. When you take these supplements that the brain requires, the brain will do its function. And if you don't take these supplements, you're just eating food and you're not taking the supplements, you cannot guarantee your brain's going to get everything it needs. And, of course, these shooters, these mass murders and things like that, we see, you know, the Vegas one, the little church in Texas, and now just recently here the shooter in this high school in Florida. They all had the same deficiency of a particular nutrient. And, of course, this nutrient deficiency causes suicidal behavior, domestic violence, mass murder, serial killers. A single deficiency of a single nutrient causes all that behavior. It's not because they look in the mirror and they don't like themselves. It's actually a nutritional deficiency. And if people were to get a hair analysis, which is in my book, Rare Earths Been Cures, there's a whole chapter dealing with, chapter 11 deals with hair analysis and how to get that done and so forth and how to interpret it. And you can actually pick these people up through the hair analysis because these nutrients are low and you supplement properly, the nutrients come back up in your hair and all these behaviors go away. Anybody who goes to a psychologist should be getting a hair analysis. Anybody who plays sports should be getting a hair analysis. Anybody who's going to school should get a hair analysis. Anybody who gets in the military should have a hair analysis. Anybody who's working and going into for an annual physical needs to have a hair analysis and so on. And you can pick those nutrient deficiencies up and supplement properly, and your brain will function perfectly. But your brain does require a lot of nutrition. And you cannot get it all from your food anymore, so you do have to do, in addition to your blood tests and EKGs and that sort of stuff, if you're going to do a physical, I would also throw in the hair analysis. And these nutrients will show up if they're low, they'll show up if they're optimal, and you know how to supplement to make your brain happy.
Dr. Wallach, I got about a minute left. Just answer this one for me.
Okay.
So some doctor out there is listening and saying, this guy is telling people to load up on cholesterol. It's going to kill them. What's your response?
Well, the doctor is misinformed. Cholesterol is an essential nutrient. It's required for the cell wall of every cell in your body. It makes up 75% of your brain weight. It's 90 cholesterol is 95% of the weight of testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, adrenal hormones. Okay, and so it's a very important part of our of functioning of our body, for our hormones and our biochemistry, our structure of our cells. And anybody who tells you to get cholesterol out of your diet, to lower your cholesterol, should really be put in jail.
Dr. Jill Wallach, check him out and his supplements for your proper nutrition at youngevity.com. That's youngevity.com. And Dr. Wallach is going to come on from time to time and talk about these issues because I have them all, and I want to know his recommendation. Dr. Wallach, I appreciate your time today. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you for your hospitality, John, and sharing with your listeners. I appreciate you. There's a lot of great questions, and you had some great questions from your listeners, and so I look forward to being with you again, sir.
All right, we will. Dr. Wallach, thank you very much. It is, at this time of the hour, it is birthday time, and the birthday guy is the famous jazz musician Ornette Coleman. Was Randolph Denard Ornette Coleman, an American jazz saxophonist, a violinist, trumpeter, and composer, one of the major innovators of free jazz, the free jazz movement of the 1960s, a term he invented with the name of his 1961 album. He was born in 1930. He died a couple years ago in 2015. From Fort Worth, Texas, Ornette Coleman. Think of him on his birthday today. That is not Ornette. That's the bass player. But they do this in jazz, and sometimes, you know, you have to just sip your coffee and wait through it. This makes me laugh. When I was in the music business, the bane of my existence was the bass and drum solos when they took their turn for solos. It was like, oh, man, come on. Just play the bass and the drums with the rest of the music, please. Oh, no, it's still going on. Where's Ornette when we need him? 1930s. He lived to be 85. He probably took care of his nutrition. Ornette Coleman's birthday.
Proving daily that the left is all hat and no cattle. It's the John Gibson Show.
It is John Gibson. So the question of the... It was probably going to be a question for quite a while here, is did Donald Trump do the right thing with his sudden agreement to meet with Kim Jong-un? Kim Jong-un's grandfather, Kim Jong-song, wanted to... you know, have newsreels of him meeting with an American president. No way, you weasel. Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, desperately wanted to meet with an American president. All he got, I think, was he got Madeleine Albright at one point. And I think Al Gore went there to meet him to bail out some Americans who wandered across the border stupidly. Didn't Lisa Ling do that?
That was the time Clinton went.
Mm.
And yes.
But Clinton was an ex-president, right?
He was the ex-president, but he flew over and got him.
Yes. But this is the opportunity for, in the words of Will Ripley, the CNN correspondent in Pyongyang. No, well, he's in Seoul, South Korea, but he goes to Pyongyang all the time and said this is a great thing for Kim Jong-un.
Kim Jong-un is getting something that his father and grandfather wanted, the optics of sitting down at the table as equals, face-to-face, with the President of the United States.
That being a big deal. Now, there are people like Jeffrey Goldberg, who's the big brain at The Atlantic, who interviewed Barack Obama all the time, that says we're getting nothing out of this.
I mean, Bob seems to be in the keep hope alive camp. I'm in the more of the you must be kidding camp.
He's talking about Bob Woodward.
We've just given Kim Jong-un something for nothing, right. Which is to say what North Korean leadership traditionally wants, Kim and his father and his grandfather have always wanted, was the grand symmetry. You know, the world's superpowers recognizing our potency and our relevance.
Well,
you don't set this up. The first thing you don't do is give them the President of the United States.
You don't give them the President of the United States. Give them some low-level functionary, some flunky like the Secretary of State. But apparently what was going on was, first of all, yesterday was stormy, 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 stormy. And while that was going on television, Donald Trump apparently was made aware that the South Korean envoys were in the White House talking with somebody about Kim Jong-un's offer, which was included this.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he is committed to denuclearization. Kim pledged that North Korea will refrain from any further nuclear or missile tests.
Well, that's a pretty big promise. Of course, you know, we actually don't believe Kim Jong-un.
I know what they're going to say tomorrow. I know what all the talkers are going to say tomorrow.
That's me.
That the president has brought North Korea to its knees.
Well, I didn't say that.
And that Kim Jong-un has cried uncle. And that they're prepared to denuclearize North Korea. They're prepared to do it. And they want to meet President Trump immediately. I don't trust them. Why should we trust them? Let me put it to you this way. Is there any agreement that we've entered into with North Korea in the last 35 years that they've upheld? The answer is no.
The answer is no. The answer is no. In fact, one of the people who has done all of this negotiating with the North Koreans is former. What was he? Bill Richardson was the UN ambassador when he was going to Pyongyang.
And, he sure was, John.
I'm correct about that, right?
Governor of New Mexico and the UN, yep.
Yeah, well, so he's on this morning looking very different. He's had some work done. It looks like he wants to be president or something. And, you know, his face is slim, and he's got this, all of a sudden, this coal black hair. But anyway, so Richardson's on saying,
I'm opposed to 95% of what the president does in foreign policy, but on this one, I'm supporting him. It's risky. We got to be properly prepared, and we cannot underestimate Kim Jong-un. He's evolving into a strategic thinker, into a man with an end game, and what we don't want to do is get trapped in a situation, a high-level negotiation, where we're not prepared, where we don't have our best negotiators forward. I mean, at the very least, the president should tell his Secretary of State what he's doing.
Well, yeah, I guess Rex Tillerson was not quite up to speed. Does it sound like Bill Richardson wants that job?
You mean to negotiate it?
Yeah.
He'd be a good guy to do it or be part of it.
Well, what about our man John Bolton, who was on the program earlier?
He'd be even better.
He would be better. I'll just remind you what John Bolton said the negotiation should be. It's... hi, Mr. Kim. I'm Donald Trump. I'm president of the United States. So here's the deal. What airport do we fly planes into to pick up all your nuclear stuff? And it's going to go to Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And what port do we put our ships into to pick up all your ICBM stuff? So name me those two things, the airport and the port.
And the best line ever, when you said to him, well, won't Kim think that if he gives up his nukes that we're going to kill him? And Bolton said, life's hard, John.
Life's hard for a dictator. He said, life is hard. What I said to him was, well, wait a minute. If you say we're going to take this stuff to Oak Ridge, right where Gaddafi's stuff is, he's going to say, but then you turned around and killed Gaddafi. Life's hard.
Hillary Clinton killed Gaddafi, but yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the question is, do you think Donald Trump is doing the right thing, agreeing to meet Kim Jong-un? Look, I don't know about all the big brain thinking, but the idea that you're not going to get any talks with us, we can't give you the president because the optics are too great for you, doesn't, you know, I can see why Donald Trump said, nah, forget that. Sure, I'll talk to him. Number here is 877-317-6432. It is John Gibson and Angry Rich on your radio. Do you think that President Trump did the right thing when he burst into the room, said, what's the deal? He heard the deal, said, okay, I'll talk. Let's have a meeting. He called his bluff. That's what he did, because according to John Bolton, Kim was just trying to stall. He figured there wouldn't be an immediate meeting. It is John Gibson, and, well, you know, Etta James.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Oh, yeah, stormy weather. This is what most of those people in the media were thinking was really going on, that Donald Trump's reach to Kim Jong-un was really to get your attention off Stormy.
Deflection?
Of course it's a deflection. Willie, if,
from Stormy?
Well, yes, of course, from
but
Stormy.
Who can keep their eyes off the whole Stormy situation?
Certainly not from the Nor'easter. But, Willie, look, just let's look back at this week.
Oh, yeah, it was a big week. There's no question it was a big week. Do you approve? Donald Trump leapt at the chance to meet with Kim Jong-un. Which is never been a sitting president listening, a meeting with Kim Jong-un. Sarah's talking about this right now.
Military exercises between the U.S. and its ally, South Korea, will continue. The maximum pressure campaign, we're not letting up. We're not going to step back or make any changes to that. We're going to continue in that effort. And we're not going to have this meeting take place until we see concrete actions that match the words and the rhetoric of North Korea.
But does he think that Kim Jong-un can be trusted as a negotiating partner?
Look, we're not in the negotiation right now. We've accepted the invitation to talk based on them following through with concrete actions on the promises that they've made.
And if I could ask you just one other thing. Lindsey Graham said about this news. He said, a word of warning to North Korean President Kim Jong-un, the worst possible thing you can do with Donald Trump in person is to meet with him in person and try to play him. If you do that, it will be the end of you and your regime. Is Lindsey Graham reading the president correct on that? Is that
I think that Lindsey Graham knows that President Trump is one of the best negotiators, and certainly I think that he has great confidence in his ability and is glad that he'll be the one at the table for the United States. I think Senator Graham has been on the other side of that and certainly knows the capabilities and the determination of President Trump. Jeff?
I know they generally don't like to give her softballs, but that was a beauty.
For example, without demanding that the North Koreans release the three Americans that are being held there.
Look, that's something that we're going to continue advocating for and pushing for, but let's not forget that the North Koreans did promise something. They've promised to denuclearize, they've promised to stop nuclear and missile testing, and they've recognized that we're going to continue in our military exercises. Let's be very clear. The United States has made zero concessions, but North Korea has made some promises. And again, this meeting won't take place without concrete actions that match the promises that have been made by North Korea.
So you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself here. They got to do something. I don't know. Rich, does it sound like they're trying to weasel out a little bit?
Not yet, but I the first three questions have been about DPRK, so I'm waiting for the Stormy question.
Oh, yeah. Well, keep an ear out. I got it here. Okay. Meantime, let me go to that very loyal listener and a big, big Trump fan, David, out in San Francisco. So, David, I imagine you're on your up on your hind legs applauding the president for this move.
Donald Trump is the kindest, gentlest, most honorable man that I've ever known in my life.
Isn't that nice? That's nice.
I don't
nice
know thought. Why. You know, John, you remember 100 years ago, we're still in the anniversary of the First World War.
Yes,
and,
we are.
100th anniversary of
the end of the First World
year.
War. Yes, yes.
Sure. And one of the famous figures out of there was Mata Hari.
She, yeah, the spy.
Spy. You see, he was sneaking around and...
Wait a minute. Are you linking up the Kim Jong-un story and the Stormy Daniels story?
Well, it's the idea that the president can be blackmailed over a sexual infidelity. And so it doesn't matter whether or not Stormy is doing the Mata Hari work. It's that anybody that knows it has the opportunity to blackmail the president.
But let's jump ahead. Are you saying that Kim Jong-un is putting pressure on Donald Trump because he, Kim Jong-un, knows about the Stormy Daniels relationship?
Well, I don't know that that even comes into it. It's whether or not Trump can be blackmailed into voting the wrong way. For example, this trade embargo. Any number of different things can...
Yeah, but haven't you lost your leverage now that it's all out in the open and the country is shrugging?
Well, that's exactly the point, that the taxpayers didn't know whether or not this blackmail was available. at the time of election. You remember the payoff?
Wait a minute. What? How's blackmail available when everybody knows it? You can only blackmail somebody if you're going to reveal the secret.
Well, the payoff was a month before Election Day, right? So there's been over a year of service to the taxpayers that Trump has put in.
Right.
And how many of the decisions were made due to extortion?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I can see that the tax bill was completely a function of blackmailing Donald Trump on Stormy Daniels. David, it's always great to hear from you. Bill in Virginia. So let's get back on track here. Do you approve of Trump accepting the invitation to sit down with Kim Jong-un?
Oh, absolutely, John. I think it's a brilliant move because, A, at this point, he doesn't actually have to do it. Just by saying he's doing it, he's putting all of his critics in a corner because he's doing something His Highness Barack Obama couldn't do. He's doing something Bill Clinton couldn't do. He's actually saying, I can do it, but you've got to follow A, B, C, and D. It's exactly what he did with immigration. It's exactly what he did with tax negotiations. So if little Kim decides he wants to fire off a missile, he can say, hey, look, I was willing to sit down with the little fella, but he didn't want to sit down and negotiate with me, similar to the Democrats with DACA, similar to the Democrats with this. So I was trying to be a negotiator. I was trying to bring peace, but the little fella, he couldn't do anything. You know, he wouldn't talk to me. I think it's brilliant. I think it also shows how juvenile and sophomoric the coverage of the Adult Entertainment Actress is. It's making the people that don't cover this now look petty.
Well, I can tell you, we were in the middle of talking about this, and all of a sudden we look up at the screen and see, oh, CNN's back on Stormy Daniels.
Well, let me ask you this. Were they trying to draw any sort of correlation between Kim Un, who has the world's largest adult entertainment video collection, and Stormy Daniels, and the meeting with Trump? Were they trying to draw those dots together?
They didn't point that out, no.
They probably should, because I think that's a story that they're not focusing on.
Now that you mention it, maybe what Kim is angling for is an introduction to Stormy.
That's what I was thinking. I think that's possibly, people are saying Rex Tillerson's on the way out at the White House. I think we may have a settlement in the Stormy case. Possible new Secretary of State.
It's Stormy for Secretary. She can solve the... She can tame the angry heart of little Kim Jong-un.
Which I think was also one of her movie titles.
All right, Bill. It's always a pleasure. I appreciate you calling.
Always a pleasure talking to you. Have a swell weekend.
Yeah, I will.
All right, so far no Stormy questions. They're all
done. Wait a minute. I just saw Jeff Zeleny from CNN asking a question. He didn't ask about Stormy?
I don't think so, but you can play it.
Well... No, I mean, Sarah's in there sort of batting these questions around.
Until we see concrete and verified actions taking place by North Korea, we are also operating from a position of strength that we haven't had in previous administrations due to the maximum pressure campaign, not just by the United States. Let's not forget that a lot of our allies and partners like China, South Korea, Japan have stepped up and done infinitely more over the past year due to the president's leadership than they have.
Yeah, well, she gave that answer about six times. We're not going to go through with this unless he follows through on this. Okay, so when we come back after this break, it's a personal issue with me. I want to talk about a Congressional Medal of Honor recipient. They're called recipients, not winners. Recipient that I know and is doing an event, and we're going to be talking to one of his relatives about him, 90-some-odd years old and going strong as ever. is John Gibson. We're back. So I want to tell you a couple, a confluence, a couple things this week. One, I was cruising through the Daily, well, through my news aggregators, and saw a story about amazing color pictures have been found of the battle for Iwo Jima in 1945 in the Pacific. And I started looking through this story, and there were amazing color pictures. These things are sort of popping up little by little. There, in deep down in the story, I see a young man with a Congressional Medal of Honor around his neck, and he's identified as a picture of him. He's identified as Herschel Woody Williams. I said, wait a minute, I know Woody Williams. Because I go every year to the Gainesville, Texas Medal of Honor event they have, and Woody always comes, and he's a great guy, fascinating guy. So here was this young picture of Woody Williams when he was received the Congressional Medal of Honor. He's only 22 years old for his bravery in the battle for Iwo Jima, which was really bad. It's the only battle in World War II where the winners, the Americans, had a higher number of casualties than the losers, the Japanese. I mean, it was a hard-fought thing. And Woody Williams was a young guy, and he performed. I mean, when you read the citation, it's just amazing what he did. And then I also have this in my hand because Woody Williams, through his Herschel Woody Williams Foundation, is supporting a big event here in my little town, supporting the Gold Star Mothers and the Gold Star Families Memorial. He's appearing tonight in Gainesville, Texas, with Terry Bradshaw. This is like a big deal here. I got in touch with his grandson, who runs the Herschel Woody Williams Foundation, and Chad Graham joins us on the phone now. Chad, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Honored to be with you.
I just want to talk about your grandfather a little bit, because here he is. He's almost 95. I have seen him in action. First of all, I was surprised he was that old. I thought he was, maybe in his 70s. I didn't realize he was up in his 90s. He's sharp as a tack. He's in good shape. He's energetic. He's vigorous. You got an explanation?
I don't think anybody can truly explain that. It's a question that he gets quite often, that folks ask him what his secret is and what keeps him going. And honestly, I think it is his purpose that keeps him going. It's partly that, it's partly his faith. But he knows that every morning there's a mission out there that he has to take on. And it's Gold Star Families, it's supporting them, it's doing all we can to try to honor, serve, and recognize Gold Star Families and the memory of their fallen heroes through our foundation's work. And that honestly, in my mind, I was joking with a gentleman this morning, that I don't think Woody Williams ever has woken up in the morning and said, what am I going to do today? I don't have anything to do today, because he lives with purpose, and that is service above self.
And I just want to read this. Stop and think about this battle for Iwo Jima, which you all know by the famous picture of the Marines raising the flag at the top of Mount Suribachi, which was taken by an AP photographer named Joe Rosenthal. And in that battle, Woody Williams, the citation reads that covered by only four riflemen, he fought desperately for 4 hours under enemy small arms fire and repeatedly returned to his own lines to prepare demolition charges and obtain serviced flamethrowers. He was a flamethrower operator, struggling back frequently to the rear of hostile emplacements to wipe out one position after another. On occasion, he daringly mounted a pillbox to insert the nozzle of his flamethrower through the air vent, killing the occupants and silencing the gun. And for that, he was given the, he earned the Congressional Medal of Honor. So I got it, just this is kind of a personal thing, because Woody's in town tonight with Terry Bradshaw. And I wanted to talk to Chad. So when you were a kid, You know, when did you realize Grandpa had done these great things?
I think it was something that as a child, you're not able to really grasp the complete gravity of it. But it is something that I think even me as a very young kid, you saw the impact that he as a person had on the folks around him, and you experience him as you have personally, and you just know there is this, there's something very, very special and very, very unique about him. And I think that as a kid, you recognize that. But as the older I've gotten, and especially as an adult now, I don't know that if I live to be as old as he is, I'll ever truly be able to completely agree or to acknowledge or grasp the gravity of this. But you definitely, even as a kid, say, wow, this is what, you know, he's my hero. And there's so many folks that can say that same thing. But it's something that is so special. Even as a kid, you say, hey, that's the kind of role model. That's what a hero looks like.
Yeah, I'm talking to Chad Graham, who's the president and CEO of the Herschel Woody Williams Medal of Honor Foundation, which you can check out by the initials at HWWMOH, Medal of Honor Foundation.org, HWWMOHF.org. So what does the foundation do? What is done in his name?
Well, our mission is to honor, serve, and recognize Gold Star families through the establishment of Gold Star Family Memorial Monuments across the country. We also provide scholarships to a segment of Gold Star children, as well as do outreach events for Gold Star families around the country. Kind of the cornerstone of those three initiatives is the Monument Project. It started out as a single monument to pay tribute to Gold Star families and their fallen heroes in the state of West Virginia. And this was something that it was Woody's idea. This was something that was his brainchild that he had pursued for some years. And that first monument in West Virginia was kind of the end game at that point. But once that was established, he individually, we as a family, and we as a foundation saw the need to put one of these in all 50 states and as many communities as will have them. Because the terrible truth is that These folks live among all of them. There are Gold Star families in every community, and there's
Chad,
definitely means everywhere.
We're at a break. Chad Graham. Gibson, so Angry Rich, as we look back on the briefing on Friday,
yes,
where Sarah Huckabee Sanders is being besieged by questions on this big North Korean deal. I mean, it just seemed like every reporter was asking about it.
Yes. And asking essentially the same question.
Yeah, over and over and over. Right. Did anybody dare to say, can I just ask about Stormy?
If memory serves, yes. It was towards the end of the briefing, and Hallie Jackson from MSNBC. Uh-huh. If memory serves, so every question is about a process question about North Korea. And they get to, the only question was asked about Stormy was by Hallie Jackson. And Sarah Sanders looked at her like she had, not with disgust, but with utter disgust. And essentially rolled her eyes and just moved on. I had nothing to say about that. On to the next question.
You described the process questions. I think people don't know what that means. But I do have an example of it.
Okay.
I mean, I got a stunning example of it. So, you know, those of you who don't have the time to watch these briefings, we do it for you. And this is kind of a perfect example of a Washington White House beat reporter process question.
Can you
kind of explain to us how this did end up coming about last night? Because we had the president pop his head in here at roughly close of business and say to supporters who were around that there was going to be this
maybe
announcement.
That y'all's close of business. Our hours must be a little later than y'all's.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure you guys were all still here.
So popped his head in here, though, and said that there would be an announcement coming around 7 p.m. from the South Koreans. Then the White House ends up telling us that it will be here on this property. Then it wasn't until an hour after that that you even sent out a statement affirming the details, some of the details, not the main part of what this announcement that President Trump would be meeting with Kim Jong-un. Can you walk us through how that all happened from the president popping in here to the fact that a South Korean official, not the White House, briefed us on our own property outside?
46-second question.
Again, this was the result of the South Korean delegation who had met with the North Koreans earlier in the week.
How many times did she say that in that briefing?
A dozen.
I mean, now, John, I know I'm getting into the weeds here for the ordinary listener who, you know, is not highly experienced in the news business. But I just have to say, what editor is asking this reporter, can we please have a TikTok on the announcements? And the paper announcements, the verbal announcements, the president popping his head, and we want to lay that out minute by minute in our newspaper.
None of them.
None of them.
Let's tell people why these were the questions. Because they want, even though the South Korean contingent was there, even though they had a letter from North Korea's leader, which is big news, and they always write letters in Asia. That's more important than a phone call or an email. They wanted to make it look like he was looking for anything to talk about to get Stormy Daniels off of there. So all these process questions were about, it seems like he's kind of found out about this thing. And he goes, oh, this would be great. This will take Stormy off the thing.
Right.
So every question they asked was about that.
Their scenario, these media guys, their scenario is, okay, so Trump is besieged by Stormy Daniels news. Stormy Daniels lawyers on TV all the time saying Trump is lying and covering up. Trump hears, somehow is made aware that in the White House, there are these South Korean envoys who have come for some kind of meeting. So he figures, well, I'm going to go poke my head in, see what's going on. So he goes into that meeting and says, what do you got? Or maybe he knew this in advance. And they say, well, Kim wants to meet with you, and he's going to give up his, he's going to stop testing nukes and missiles. And he recognizes the military alliance between South Korea and the United States. He's not going to demand that our war games stop. And so then Trump, instead of saying, well, let's have Tillerson take care of this, and he says, I'm taking that meeting because I know that will be big news and nobody will dare ask about Stormy any longer.
That's what they want you to believe.
Yeah,
he's walking around there like a, you know, like a moron eating a hamburger and trying to get Stormy off the headlines and breezes into the Oval Office or someplace. And H.R. McMaster is talking to the South Koreans when they have a letter from the North Koreans. And he just threw it out there. And if that was his, if he did do that, he failed.
Yeah, I know, because they're not letting go of Stormy. Hey, guess who's on the line, Rich?
Khalil,
exactly.
Oh, what's up, y'all?
What's up, player?
Hey, man.
Hey.
I'm hearing all this wonderful news. I'm liking the guy more. Pitbull. I know what's up.
Okay. Your phone was dropping out a little bit, so you think
I'm liking Trump.
Okay,
all you need to do now is get a...
See, get
and
a what?
I know a pit bull.
Oh,
he gets
pit bull.
A pit bull. I know he's a brother.
Oh,
he doesn't have a dog.
That's all he needs. He needs a pit bull. He's good, man.
Not a Portuguese water dog?
No, man. Oh, yeah, man. A pit bull on Rottweiler. He's in, man. You're going to see the Democrats just going to just lose miserably. Every brother going to vote for this dude, man. Yo, he had... Yo, his other girl had to have twins to hold the twins. Man, that's beautiful, man. And that's wonderful. Can't they have midgets to hold the twins? Come on, man. I love this guy.
You know, it's... We should
celebrate this.
I'm not sure I know exactly what to say, but
the brothers will be down for Trump if he gets a pit bull.
Pit bull or Rottweiler? I can guarantee him probably about a 25% bump in the black vote, man. 25% bump. Guaranteed.
Well, maybe we should just send him one. My son has got one, and he doesn't live 20 miles from the White House. He could drop it over.
Yeah, man. Tell Jay to take it up there, man. I'm telling you, it'll be beautiful, man.
Jake's got one of these little pit puppies, and Jake's the only one that could walk it, because when the kids walk it or his wife walks it, it gets off the chain and eats the neighbor's dogs.
Oh, man, that's beautiful. That's what I'm talking about. He would walk into especially if he walked into the press conference, you know, press room, and then all of a sudden, you know, somebody started acting something stupid, and you see the pit just start going crazy. Oh, man, that'd be beautiful, man. I'm telling you.
Hey, man. Khalil, come on. Always great to hear from you, Khalil. It's birthday time. Whoa. So it's Question Mark and the Mysterians. This guy changed his name officially to Question Mark. That's all he had to do to sign it. Question Mark and the Mysterians in 96 Tears. Since you left me, you're always laughing. Love this song. I think that John, were you the one that told me it's somebody's birthday in this group? Frank Rodriguez? Is he Question Mark?
No, he's the keyboard. He's the
keyboard player. Well, he's good.
He's the guy that played that line.
Listen to him. All right, it is Angry Rich and John Gibson on your radio, along with John up in Minneapolis, and on your internet at johngibson.com. Birthday for Frank Rodriguez in Question Mark and the Mysterians. I think they only had one hit, didn't they? I think it was just this one. I'll just try.